You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
There is a Māori whakatauki that says, he tangata takahi manuhiri, he marae puehu. This means a person who mistreats their guests has a dusty marae. Throughout this election campaign, there has been even more scapegoating of migrants than usual. A deteriorating social situation in New Zealand with rising inequality and decreasing access to basic needs brings about the blame game. And more often than not, it is those with, quote, Chinese-sounding names, unquote, that get the rap. Last week, we looked into policies around immigration, debunking the relationship between migrants and rising house prices, and how the government is searching for the ideal migrant. Discussions surrounding immigration has seen politicians and the general New Zealand population categorising people as low or high quality immigrants, which is problematic at the very least. Today we hear from two Chinese New Zealanders who are fed up with being personally attacked by these issues, and a possible solution from a group advocating for the dismantling of systemic racism in Aotearoa. Saren Liu is a New Zealand-born Chinese mum of four, born to two working-class Chinese immigrants. Recently, she publicly released a letter urging people to rethink their vote for Jacinda Ardern and the Labour Party. The letter reads, "On behalf of any immigrant or child of an immigrant who has ever been made to feel non-Kiwi, I will be casting my vote these elections with a no to Labour." In a bid for votes, Labour has thrown their historical legacy, the principle of equality for all, out the window. "We as immigrants have contributed hugely to New Zealand and we hold our heads high. We are compassionate, diverse, hardworking people. We are not to be cast as uncaring for New Zealanders." I spoke with Saren about the letter.
I guess I've come from a point where I've been listening carefully to, you know, what's going on in the elections. And I was at a point where I was definitely one of those people that's worried about, you know, the poverty and the widening gap between rich and poor, and to think that Jacinda Ardern really did speak to me, you know, in the first couple of weeks of her campaign. But as I started to listen deeper and started to listen to the debates, I kind of suddenly got this, not suddenly, it kind of crept up on me that perhaps she wasn't as true to, you know, leftist ideals as what she appears to be, and that in fact she was still dancing along the same route as her predecessor, Andrew Little, on trying to link the whole idea of immigration to, you know, Auckland and wider New Zealand's, you know, perceived social issues. And that's where I started to become really uncomfortable and also quite angry about that link.
Your letter, it's titled "I Protest Vote No to Jacinda." So was it a specific... are you specifically drawing attention to Jacinda or the Labour Party's?
Obviously it's the Labour Party, but I guess I felt very disappointed. Like, she was questioned at the beginning of when she took over the reins about the list that was circulated, listing out, you know, Asian names for buyers, which was a disgusting piece of, you know, work by the Labour Party, and she stopped short of calling it racist, and I found that hugely disappointing because it clearly was racist. And then I think her doing that was probably my first point. And then the more I listened in the debates, I thought it's quite a cunning ploy in a way that she's gaining the populist vote by kind of being anti-immigrant and blaming immigrants for, you know, subliminally, not overtly, but definitely there's an undercurrent of trying to make immigrants feel bad for the lack of housing or the housing prices being pushed up or the lack of infrastructure and taking jobs, which I think is really it's not true, and I think it's really damaging for us as immigrants or people that are related to immigrants or look like immigrants in society.
So the Chinese-sounding names issue, I'm putting that in quotes, was back in 2015. So have you been a sort of Labour supporter prior to this letter?
I was. We were always brought up very left wing, you know, and as we were brought up, you know, we were always told, you know, leftist groups are more for the coloured people and more for, you know, working class, which we were. So yes, I was more Labour leaning at that point. Yeah.
And you think that this particular campaign has been a far more kind of personal attack.
Yeah, I do. I do think it was more pointed. And I think perhaps I feel more strongly about it because it's coming out of a spokesperson who's young, you know, she's the next generation. You know, you've got Winston Peters and he's always rocking on about the same issues, but I guess he doesn't have the audience of the next generation. And for me, it's just sad that, you know, I had to put up with a lot of not feeling, you know, quite Kiwi enough as a child. And I think that we should have moved past this, and we should have moved past this rhetoric, because it's 2017, you know, and to have also, you know, this whole harking back to Kiwi jobs for Kiwi people and that kind of language, I think, is very nationalistic and quite separatist in a way, because what is you know, average person perceive as a Kiwi, and I know as I've grown up that, you know, I've had to always explain myself, you know, being of a different colour, and I don't think that moving forward it should be something that, you know, my future generation or our, you know, children should have to even think about. And I think, unfortunately, this brings us back to that kind of thinking.
So that the whole sort of concept of Kiwi trying to unify people, but actually it does polarise people?
It does polarise, and you only have to look at... you know, and you know, maybe I'm on social media too much, but it would seem that every probably fifth person that is, you know, banging on about Labour, it's like, yeah, send those immigrants home. They're taking our jobs. Yeah, I need a job. We need houses for Kiwis. And I just think this. Are we back? Are we back there really? And I think that it's in. You know, they had the Wall Street Journal, I think, liken her rhetoric to Trump's. And to me, as a coloured person or the daughter of immigrants, I totally can see that link. And in fact, I felt that link very strongly before the article came out. So it's not just me that can feel it. You know, it's appealing to, you know, it's appealing to the one in, say, let's be generous, one in eight or one in ten xenophobe in New Zealand society, which I just don't think is a correct way to win votes.
And do you think that, I suppose, the position that you're coming from is that you are saying that the discourse around talking about immigration solely in terms of economic measurements, that's problematic, that's adding to this xenophobia?
Yeah, I do. I do think that. And I also think, look, there's something very emotional about people in homes, you know, and New Zealand is a very, obviously, it's become a thing in the media, and probably quite rightly in many respects. But I don't think it's correct to link immigration directly to it. I think there are other ways that we can highlight these issues, because actually, if you listen to academics, and it's actually only a very small percentage. It's not actually as major as what we're led to believe, and it's just, I think it's a sad political instrument to use, and it actually throws anyone that doesn't potentially look Kiwi a little bit under the bus. I protest that kind of talk, because it's one thing to have someone that's, you know, got a bit of those sort of feelings on the street, and as you, I guess, if you talk to probably every second Asian or a lot of my friends that I know, they've always had something thrown at them. But to actually have it endorsed by a leader is so dangerous in my book. It's kind of like, of course, Trump, you know, he was supposedly talking about the illegal immigrants and all the rest of it. But actually, you know, when he did win, there was definitely other immigrants who got given flak on the back of that. I'm not saying that Labour is saying it outright, but it's just being able to justify that kind of thinking, which has become dangerous in society.
What has the response been when you've talked about these issues with people?
Most people agree. And what I've found sad is that probably every one of them agreed, and that's what's made me quite emotional. Not necessarily, they don't necessarily agree that Labour's got it all wrong, or, you know, and they're not definitely not necessarily any one particular party voters. But the sad thing is that most of us have all been subject to, you know, casual racism, whether it's in the home or whether it's, some people have had it overtly in the street. I've had, you know, a very good friend of mine learning English, and she's been told by a teacher that, you know, she and her daughter are to blame for the housing crisis. And this is where the danger comes in. It's the people that can't see the bigger picture. And so they act on their fears, and their fears is of other and difference. And now they've been told by a particular party that, yes, the others are making life difficult for them. And that's where it becomes so sad.
So how do we change it?
I think we can. I don't think it has to be about other. I think it has to be about the issues at hand and what we can do. And I don't think that. I think immigration is healthy. You know, also focus on the positives. Focus on. There's a lot of hard-working people that are out there. You know, and they're doing their very best to make a good life. And they're not making. You know, they're putting their kids through education. They're feeding them. They're doing the best that they can. And they're becoming strong contributors to our society. I want to add that just anyone, I think, anyone that has felt that sadness of feeling, whether it's small or large, whether they've ever been made to feel un-Kiwi, you know, just to think about it carefully, think about, you know, what the leaders are saying, and think about who supports us as a group. And not only just us, but also as a really diverse, multicultural, amazing country. You know, we've got everything to be grateful for, and I don't think sort of singling out any particular, you know, group of people for the problems that we have in society should be condoned. And that's probably why I felt so compelled to write that letter. Mm. And I just hope that people, you know, I understand where people are coming from, and I understand what it feels like to be told that you're not Kiwi enough. And I just don't want other people, I just don't want New Zealand to go down that route again.
Jo Lim is an immigrant of Malaysian and Chinese descent and has been in New Zealand for 10 years. I asked Jo how he had found the election so far.
So far, from what I can see and from what I've been reading or even just watching the news on the TV and stuff like that, it's quite consistent with what actually has been kind of proposed by these party in even the previous elections and whatnot. So it's quite similar, except like certain policies are quite drastic. There are certain drastic changes, of course. But aside from that, everything else, nothing really quite surprises me. Yeah.
What do you mean by it doesn't surprise you?
Like the kind of rhetoric, say, for example, on, I don't know, the kind of housing crisis, for example, like everyone or almost every party is like, oh, we need more housing, we need more of this. That has kind of been around for a while now. And at the moment, we're not seeing a lot of, like, you know, for me, at least, this is my personal opinion. I just feel like nothing has been done on that yet. Of course, there are a lot of like promises now with the election closing in. You know, X amount of job, X amount of houses needs to be built and all the rest of it. But we have yet to see any of these kind of, you know, happen in the past, I suppose. Mm. Yeah.
So in terms of immigration policy, have you been surprised?
No, I wouldn't say I'm surprised. I'm more likely to be appalled by it than, you know, be surprised by it. Because, again, the kind of immigration policy proposes by these parties, I think, well, I'm not saying that, you know, they're all exactly the same. They're quite similar. Mostly are focusing on reducing, say, for example, the migrant numbers. And also, most of them are seeking for specific type of immigrants, which I always find it fascinating because, like, how do you, you know, select specific people that you want to be your people? It just does not make sense, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm not saying that everyone can just, you know, barge into a country and be who they want in the end of the day. Of course, they have to contribute to the society. They actually have to be, you know, useful to a certain extent and, of course, have good character, background and whatsoever. But the fact that when these parties, for example, with their policies, are seeking for so-called, I don't know, highly skilled migrant, for example, or mostly they're just seeking for highly skilled migrant, but they are kind of, you know, doing that based on their income rather than, you know, the sort of actual skill. And even though they say if they're seeking for highly skilled migrant, the highly skilled migrant might not be the kind of job that the market actually needs, for example. but they can be still highly skilled, right?
You said that anybody who comes here has to contribute to society, right? So, and a lot of parties actually use that phrase. Mm-hmm. But while they use that phrase and while they give these policies, there's almost an assumption that anyone that comes here wouldn't contribute to society unless they're over a certain salary threshold.
Yeah, which is again, I think it's quite, when you're just kind of categorizing people into based on, you know, their income bracket and all the rest of it, instead of looking like at the sort of wider contribution that they might have to the society, I don't know, be it like, I don't know, contributing culturally or contributing, I don't know, not just the workforce, but overall the society's well-being or the society's image, right? I mean, of course, As a country, when you're running a country, economic is really important, which we all get that. But I think when you kind of select your citizen based on how much they earn and whatsoever, instead of like, you know, looking at the sort of wider picture, how can they make the society richer, right? Not just money-wise, but also culturally and also on multiple level, really. I think that might be problematic.
So that kind of process of dehumanizing in a way and simply making or marking people with a dollar sign, what does that mean for current and future migrants?
First thing first, I think it creates a lot of fear for the immigrants that are already here. I mean, like temporary immigrant, right? So immigrant, there's so many different types of them. So for the sort of temporary immigrant who is like, you know, living off a working visa in New Zealand, that's definitely stirring a lot of fear and uncertainty in their future. So it's kind of like, you know, they are contributing to our society, but at the same time, they have to actually deal with the kind of uncertainty whether they will be deported, for example, or whether they will be still manage to apply for a work visa after the current one has expired. So for the existing temporary migrant in this country, I think it's quite uncertain for them. And whereas for the future migrant, to a certain extent, I suppose if you can't meet the threshold, obviously you don't even need to think about the options of migrating here to begin with, which is kind of like the cruel truth in, or reality that we're facing here. But as for the people who have the ability to migrate, and when you look into the sort of political rhetorics about immigrants in this country, to a certain extent, I think people might feel unwelcome. Or they're just reduced into, like, you know, part of a bigger number games instead of, like, you know, being seen as a full-fledged New Zealander. And again, what is a full-fledged New Zealander, right? And this election has kind of failed to sort of assert that part where they answer the question of, like, you know, what does a New Zealand identity entail, right? And now they're doing a lot of these kind of, like, to me, to a certain extent, it's quite gimmicky, right? That you're making claims about, like, oh, let's make, say, for example, te reo to be, you know, compulsory in every school and all the rest of it. Well, good, make it happen then. Because if that's part of the identity that you claim that's so important to the national heritage and culture, then I think you should, the party should really make it happen. Because currently we're seeing, like, you know, little blips of, like, you know, Māori Language Week here, for example. Why does it have to be a specific week that you learn language to be precise, right? Why can't you learn it every day? And so, yeah, again, I might have digressed a little bit, but yeah, so that kind of, like, you know, immigrants are feeling probably with the current immigration policy for future immigrant, you probably will feel that, like, you know, quite unwelcome with the current immigration rhetorics that are being proposed by these policies.
Do you think that that's actually reflective of the wider New Zealand population, actually? The attitude towards it, the treatment of migrants, the sort of discussions in the media that don't actually address immigrants as humans, is that something that politicians are doing to appeal to New Zealanders?
Definitely, that's what I mean, with election closing in and stuff like that, everyone is trying to make their point, like, clearer, and sometimes by inciting more fear, because that makes it somehow more memorable. I don't necessarily think that whatever the politicians say is actually, you know, the sentiments of all New Zealander thinking about, you know, immigration and stuff like that, because I believe there are still New Zealanders who are very, you know, open to the idea of, like, you know, having, you know, a multicultural society or having more tolerance or harmony and whatsoever. But I certainly think that it does kind of reflect a certain demographic and what they think about immigration in particular. In that regards, I'm probably talking about the people with power and money, of course. I don't think, in short, I don't think it kind of reflects, you know, we as a society as a whole, that we are all anti-immigration. I mean, there are a certain bunch of people who does. But I think that, like, you know, New Zealand could do a little bit with more acceptance towards these people who might actually contribute in the end to New Zealand.
On that note, in terms of inciting fear, there's been a lot of talk, not just this election, but prior to, around blaming migrants for the rising house prices. Why do people blame migrants for rising house prices?
I think partly is, I'll blame it on human nature, really, because we tend to just attribute blames to other people, right? We will never question our own fault most of the time. The easiest way to do that is to just kind of put it onto other people, to pin it onto other people, because it's easy. And unfortunately, in this instance and in this context that we're talking about, the immigrants are often being blamed for those kind of instances, like what you see at the sort of rising house prices or not enough housing for the locals, right? And the funny thing is, like, when they say there's not enough house for the local, it's the same thing as there's not enough house for everyone. Why don't you just say that, right? It's easier. But they can't say that, because when they say that, people will know that the government hasn't been doing their job in providing everyone with adequate housing and all the rest of it. I'm not saying that we should live off the government, but, you know, for people who actually, you know, work hard and pay their taxes and stuff like that, they should be able to, you know, when the government do provide housing and stuff like that, you should be able to, I don't know, rent it off the government or something like that. So we're not saying that we're living off the government for free, right? But we want more infrastructure so that we can actually, you know, pay to, I don't know, use the infrastructure and something like that. We're more than happy to do that. But the thing is that when there's no infrastructure, what are you going to pay for? There's just nothing, right? So the infrastructure hasn't been set up right. And that's why, like, when they're trying to blame the immigrants for the housing prices instead of, like, you know, everyone or other factors has been driving the housing prices up, it's easier to just kind of, like, you know, just say that, you know, is the outsider who's doing it. And that's actually kind of related to the sort of anti-immigration sentiment that this country has been carrying across for, like, God knows how many years now, right? And so it has formed a kind of attitude within, like, you know, the society that, like, immigrants are bad people, immigrants are here to rob our, take our jobs, and immigrants is this and that, nothing really positive, really. So when it comes to blaming them, it becomes easier over the years, when you kind of concretize the images of, you know, the immigrants being the bad people. So when you blame it onto them, it's easier. It gets easier every year, trust me, and people start to stop questioning that, which I find it quite detrimental as well.
And it's only certain immigrants, isn't it? It's not expats, perhaps, that are stealing our houses. No.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what you see, like, the bloody Chinese are taking our houses, right? Being, you know, ethnically Chinese myself, I find it quite funny, because I'm still living in a rented place, obviously. I think the other reason about migration and why it's easier to just sort of blame it onto migrants, it's because the type of immigration has gone through a lot of changes over the years, right? So back then, we're talking about, like, years and years ago, when people are coming in and settle down for good and never leave the country ever, right? So they are sort of naturalized or assimilated into New Zealand culture and all the rest of it. But now immigration type has changed so much, right? So now we're talking about transnational immigration. We're talking about immigrants that actually migrate to another country and still maintain a really close ties with their homeland, right? So it's easier to just sort of class these migrants as, like, you know, they're not very loyal to the country. They're just buying up all the houses here just to, you know, suck us all dry off, you know, our economic benefit, and then, you know, pump it all back into, I don't know, their home country of wherever that is, right? So it's easier to do that now, to just sort of point the finger and point out their so-called disloyalty because they have a tie with their home country.
So you came here on a student visa, and there are going to be, well, depending on the government, will be changes to the student visa. What do you think about that?
I think the changes to the student visa is really unfair to begin with. But now that I think the some of the parties are actually trying to restrict the kind of visa that you can get after your studies and stuff like that, which I think can be quite detrimental to the tertiary education here. New Zealand, because a lot of the big money, let's just put it this way, that comes that pumps into the sort of tertiary education is from international students, right? Coming from all over the world because they get charged international student fee. And I'm talking about like, say for an art degree, you're paying 20 to 22,000. I think it's even higher now, for like per annual. So a degree is 3 years, right? So you can do the math. It's about like $60,000 to $70,000 just for a degree. So it gets very expensive for international students to actually have to come here. And then aside from the kind of student, like the tuition fees, you still, on top of that, you have to pay for your living expenses and all the rest of that. So it's quite expensive. And of course, when people come here to study and stuff like that, I'm not saying all of them are like that, but some people like me, for example, we tend to want to, like, you know, let's see what are the opportunities out there once we finish studying and stuff like that. But now they're just trying to sort of take that away, which kind of makes you think that, like, you know, they all just want the money, and then after they take all the money from you, after the 3 years, they're just kind of like, nah, now you can go back to your country, we don't need your money anymore. It's no secret that to a certain extent, I mean, university are now, not now, but university is still a business, right? That aspect, I understand that and I get that. But I mean, like, you can at least, I don't know, make it a little bit more subtle. that you're not just here to kind of rob people of money, that, and then after that, when they're done with you for good, and then they're just going to be like, you know, we don't need you anymore. You can go. We've taken like 70,000 from you. So that's it. We're good. Now you can go. So what does that mean for international student, right, who hopefully one day will be able to kind of, you know, live the same Kiwi dreams as everyone else?
Racial Equity Aotearoa is a group committed to Indigenous mana motuhake and the dismantling of systemic racism in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Part of their work involves offering a sidelined, or perhaps purposely marginalised, perspective when it comes to immigration. This is a tikanga Māori approach. In an article for Crack'em, REA emphasises that this is their own whakaaro on immigration, though it is not a unique position, but should not be considered the definitive tikanga position, as Māori are not a homogenous group, and tikanga and kawa vary between iwi. So, in their discussions, REA uses kawa, whakapapa and matauranga associated with the marae and the porphyry process to frame the discussion of immigration. REA explains that the marae relationship between hau kāinga, those belonging to the marae through whakapapa, those belonging to the marae through whakapapa, and manuhiri, those welcomed onto the marae as guests, is significant in understanding a tikanga perspective around immigration. In this process, both parties are given the mana and respect afforded. This tikanga does not subscribe to the fashion of commodifying migrants into unskilled or skilled. REA likens this fashion as viewing immigrants from an economic worldview that is at the heart of border imperialism and the exploitative machinations of late capitalism. The marae metaphor does not allow for this. This does not mean economics should be neglected from the discussions, but rather it asks us to shift the focus away from objectifying people based on their economic worth. This means, of course, that mana is afforded to the hosts of the marae, the hau kāinga. This is a key point. If we are perceiving Aotearoa as a marae, then we must acknowledge that hau kāinga refers to the tangata whenua of these islands. For the past two centuries, Māori have not been in a constitutional position to offer proper manaakitanga to those wanting to make Aotearoa home. The Crown, by way of colonisation, both through military force and legislation, have assumed the right to be the hau kāinga of New Zealand. From a tikanga perspective, the capacity to care for the well-being of Papa Tuanuku is intimately connected to the hau kāinga's capacity to care for manuhiri as well as themselves. So, REA concludes, the fight against xenophobic border imperialism that often demonises migrants of colour is a cause that must take into account the fight for Māori reclamation of their ancestral responsibility for being the kaitiaki and hau kāinga of Aotearoa. REA believes the discussion around immigration should be contextualised to this country and include Indigenous narratives.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.